A special joint committee of Illinois senators and representatives will meet Wednesday to learn about abuse and neglect in the state's network of group homes for the developmentally disabled. I'm Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief. The hearing follows an in-depth investigation by the Chicago Tribune earlier this month that turned up a series of troubling findings. Among them, that the homes, you may hear them referred to as CILAs, are often understaffed. There's high turnover of workers who are often poorly paid and undertrained, even though they're tasked with the difficult job of caring for physically strong adults who may have the mental capacity of a toddler. Just how big a problem it all is difficult to pinpoint given opaque state laws. The organization Equip for Equality is one of Illinois' leading advocates for developmentally disabled individuals. I spoke with President Zina Nadich and investigator Deborah Kennedy about what they hope legislators will learn and do in this hearing.
Unfortunately, Illinois has underfunded its community service system and oversight of that system for literally decades. That creates an environment where too often you have tragedy. So we're very concerned about it, and we hope this will be something that can lead to some reinvestment in the community system and further investment in the oversight system.
Is it a question of lack of funding, or is there something more to it? With support from many advocates, Illinois has made a push in recent years to move disabled persons out of large state institutions and into these homes. They're literally houses in neighborhoods where 4 to 8 disabled people may live. I asked, could it be that these smaller places open the door to neglect and abuse because they're diffuse and there's a lack of oversight? Again, here's Nadich.
Well, actually, the incidents that were talked about are incidents that we've also seen in the state-operated facilities, in the private institutions like nursing homes and intermediate care facilities for people with developmental disabilities, as well as in some of the CILAs or group homes. So these kinds of incidents we've seen sort of across the service system. Debbie, whose team does the investigations and does a lot of the oversight for us, with very limited resources of the community, are not seeing that these are widespread compared to what we see in terms of in other settings. You want to jump in, Debbie?
Sure. Certainly we're terribly concerned about what's in the in the Tribune, as are all sorts of people. But in our role, we have seen many, many, many successful stories of people thriving in the community. And so the number of tragedies as described in the Tribune article, you know, is not an everyday or commonplace event, fortunately. Needless to say, you know, any one death is a tragedy, and we should be doing all we can to learn from each of those incidents to prevent the next.
Do you feel like this series maybe has opened the eyes at all, perhaps to legislators, or is it coming too late given votes during the veto session regarding wages for employees who do need to take care of individuals that are living in CILAs? Can you describe that rate of pay, how that might affect things, and what duties somebody who is in that line of work is responsible for doing?
Supported the increase in the wages for folks in the community. These can be challenging jobs. They can be extremely rewarding jobs, but it takes a certain kind of person to do the work, and the positions clearly warrant an increase in pay and an increase in the sort of professionalism that needs to go along with supporting people effectively in the community. I hope this will advance the cause of the agency staff in having their salaries increased and professionalizing the positions.
Nadich says she hopes that during the hearing, lawmakers have a serious discussion about what caretakers should be paid and the discrepancy between state employees who do that work in state institutions versus those working in community homes.
The other issue is that you have to have a strong and effective oversight system. And it has to be well-funded, and it has to have sufficient independence to do its job. And we also believe there should be an independent element to that, or a sense of check on that system. And that's a role in the past we've played, and we think, you know, we're hoping in the future we could play a stronger role in terms of helping to support the reforms that are needed.
How so? What sort of stronger role could you play? Is it, you know, having something official in statute? Is it getting more state supports so you can hire more monitors? Or what do you think, kind of on a true practical level, would make a difference? And do you plan to
say that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in the past, we have had some state funding that allowed us to, years ago, we did reviews of the performance of the Office of Inspector General, an independent review, where we looked at how they conducted investigations. We have in fact, done reviews and monitoring of facilities, including the facility that was highlighted in the Trib story today. These are God's people, too. They called it Southwest, but we had done Tribune story referred to the federal mandated independent watchdog report that was the one we produced. We've been able to go into some very troubled facilities and in many cases help get them closed and sort of provide an independent perspective on what's going on. Our abuse investigation team was set up as a national demonstration project by Congress and funded through the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services years ago. The only program that was established at the time in the country. And we have a lot of expertise. We have a multidisciplinary clinical team and attorneys that go out and do the reviews. And we think this is an important piece to complement the role that the state is playing in terms of conducting routine monitoring at facilities.
Did you request this hearing from legislators, or is this a reaction to the media investigation or something that you think they should do more regularly anyway? I don't know anything in particular about this. I guess I know it through my job. I sit through hearings after hearings after hearings, and sometimes
right.
they are just a regular part that is capital like clockwork. You have a committee. Other times they can be really a profound opportunity to educate and change.
Well, over the years, we've called for a lot of reforms of the state investigatory system, some of the gaps that exist in the different state agency oversight systems. We've identified a lot of problems that can result in some very serious consequences. And called for reforms. And it's unfortunate that it takes an expose in the newspaper to get legislative hearings and to get people talking about change. So while at the time we did not call on the legislature to do these hearings, because we figured the hearings, frankly, were going to come of their own accord based on the series. But the key here is that even when the story is sort of time has passed and people are thinking about it less, it's really important that the state make a commitment to institute significant reforms and keep at it long after the crisis has subsided. There have been other serious situations that have gotten a lot of media attention where we've been able to pass legislation, like to create the mortality review board. And then once the attention's kind of off of that, these systems can often languish. This is not, the problems here are not problems that have just emerged under, you know, the new administration. These are problems that have been around for, frankly, decades. And it's time that the state really focus some resources and attention on some creative solutions. Debbie, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Well, I think you said that very well, Sina. When we first issued the first report on Southwest Disability Supports and Services, which was previously known as These Are God's People Too, we raised these same issues of a lack of a sufficiently funded system through which to assure the provision of quality services and the safety of people being served. Our recommended reforms at that point were not implemented.
Didn't CMS come in behind us on that one?
Yes.
And when was that, did you say? I'm sorry.
That was 2003. So
people that say this is an extension of the budget impasse, no. Did that contribute or make things worse? Or really this has just been so long on the bottom of the totem pole for Illinois when it comes to funding or as a priority?
It's longstanding. Our lack of commitment to ensuring a robust and effective, cohesive system where the questions of the quality of the service and the safety of the individuals and the well-being and ensuring that people have choice in where they're going to live and, you know, allowing them to thrive. We have not provided the kind of resources into an oversight system that will effectively ensure that all of that happens. It's historical. It's longstanding. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the impasse has resulted in a lot of chaos and confusion, and in some agencies, a lot of loss of positions, which makes it, you know, even more challenging. But as Debbie said, it's basically kind of was a broken system, you know, had significant problems for years. You know, we really need now to sort of set something up that's effective.
So just to circle back to this, because I try and make things really concrete, is there a certain dollar amount, or if you were to say these three things need to happen, 1, 2, 3, what would that be? What can make the biggest difference?
Well, one, I guess, would be that they make a major investment in in-home and community-based services, financial investment, so that the agency has have the resources to run quality programs, and that includes the ability to hire quality people, train them, and retain them so that we don't have, you know, the high turnover, we don't have all these people doing a lot of overtime, and we actually enable people to make this a career, something they want to, you know, do, spend their life doing, just like is the case for people who are working in state-operated facilities that serve people with very similar needs. There needs to be an ability to hire really good people and retain them. It's very hard to do that when you're paying people, you know, $9 an hour. So that's one piece. I think the second piece is the oversight system has to have the resources and authority to get in there and do what they need to do. And again, that's a system that's been heavily underfunded. And then we do think there should be third, a piece that's independent that can be kind of a final check on the system, so that when the pieces start not working or when things become, you know, fall below a certain threshold of performance, it can be brought to the attention of state officials so that they can recognize that things are going south and take some timely action. I mean, I think those are three key pieces. And then we do agree with the Tribune that there needs to be transparency. People need to be able to know about the providers they're considering for services and should know about the problems and what's being remedied at those facilities. There should be a much more open process. And that's true, frankly, for the state institutions and for the nursing homes. Okay. I mean, the information that is available to people is pretty complicated, and most people reading it would not know what to make of it, how to compare facilities. I mean, there's just a lot of problems. And I think one thing that would help across the system would be if there's some independent surveying of the people who receive the services, because at least then people with disabilities and their families can see what others who have received services in this facility actually think of it. So if you promise that this is anonymous, the information won't be shared with the provider, that's something that some other states have done, and I think it is an important element of this.
Illinois' Freedom of Information Act has some gaping holes when it comes to information about these community homes. The state won't even share their locations. It's the age-old standoff between privacy concerns and transparency. Where should that line be?
Well, there is that, but there are certainly privacy concerns. You know, much like you or I would not want our addresses, you know, out there for anyone to find.
Right.
There are privacy concerns, but that doesn't mean that you can't access or shouldn't be able to access information about a facility, about an agency, in a format that is user-friendly, understandable, and easy to find. So I think there are ways to make the information available without impacting an individual's privacy rights. But, you know, certainly if I'm living in a particular home run by an agency and bad things are occurring, I would want to know if I were living there, and if I had a family member living there, I would want to know. So there are a lot of things that can be done to make the process transparent, to give information to people from which to make informed decisions about an agency, whether it's the right fit or not the right fit, and allow people to make good choices in that fashion.
Ladies, is there anything else that you would like to share or clarify?
Obviously, the story tells some very heartbreaking tales about what's happened to some individuals in the system. Like I said, these are incidents that we've seen occur not just in the community, but in state-operated facilities and nursing homes and similar institutional settings. So we just really hope that this time around, the administration and the legislature can get together on this issue and find a way to pass a budget that would include resources for the communities, agencies, and enhanced oversight system that includes an independent component, and that people really do get the access to the information they need so that they can actually be empowered to make meaningful decisions about where they're going to live or where they're going to help place the loved one.
That was Equip for Equality CEO Zina Nadich. You also heard from one of the organization's vice presidents, Deborah Kennedy, both speaking about concerns of how Illinois cares for developmentally disabled residents. A joint House-Senate hearing is scheduled for tomorrow, focused on abuse and neglect in community homes. The hearing was called after an investigative series in the Chicago Tribune. You can find a link on our website. For Illinois Edition, I'm State House Bureau Chief Amanda Vinicky.